You guys can go back and see my sales letter that I gave you for the birthday bash. And you can go back and look at what I've done here. And it, you know, just says, hey, phew, I just got back from this and this is awesome. And we added an audience shot so people, you know, get that social proof of, oh my God, this thing was huge and I missed it. And then a couple other pictures of stuff going on, like me and Mickey Mouse. And then you want to focus on trying to get testimonials. And we're going to talk about, I have a whole section in the second manual on testimonials. But you want to use your live events or any other time that we can, if we're productizing it, whenever we did it live, let's get testimonials from those first people and then add that into our productized sales letter. And so you can see a little bit about that there. 561 is an email for a pre-publication push for those birthday bash tapes. 563 is selling the underground DVDs. And you can also, something else to think about is, do you want to do a limited quantity release? Do you want to do it, you know, just as many as you sell? And, you know, there's different pros and cons. If you do a limited release and you sell out all of them, you're like, damn it, I just missed out on, you know, an extra whatever number of units. Though, you know, the good side is you got the scarcity going.
As far as selling limited units, how much do you oversell so that you actually sell that many?
That's an interesting question. I typically will sell maybe like two or three or four units that are maybe above that, just because I know there'll be a handful of returns and a couple like bad payments or stuff that go through. But I really don't go way above. Like if I say it's 750, actually for 750, we had exactly 750 briefcases numbered and that was it. So we never oversold that. For other times when it's like public domain goldmine, we say it's 250, we might sell like 252. And that's it. I mean, I really try and stick very, very tightly to what I say I'm gonna do. So otherwise you lose integrity when, so it's pretty easy to find out online, especially if you're selling something that's limited and well, there's only 50 of these copies available, but yet I do a quick search and there's 500 people selling that thing. I don't know if I have any examples in here, but yeah, that's what I did is when returns come back, well, so we'll do a sold out page, which is actually really important for other reasons too, because it gets your list to jump next time. So that's really important. And then we get them on a waiting list. And then when the returns come back, yeah, it's just sending them out. I think in your yellow manual, he's got a yellow manual handy. I'm pretty sure in the public domain goldmine example, yeah, okay, page 95 is, yeah, sorry you missed out. Thanks, Chris. Sorry you missed out. So then name and email, and then we just get them on that waiting list. And then here's the email out to them. Hey, you know, since you signed up for the priority notice, you'd like to know that you can grab these sold out ones because we got six copies that came back for various reasons. And I really believe, page 97, I really believe in telling people the reason why, and especially for returns. Yeah. And that's important for, they're like, well, the product must suck then.
I don't know if you're going to get into this in a little bit, but can you talk a little bit about return rate, refund rates, and what's good, what's average, what we should be expecting?
No, I don't have that in my notes, so let's talk about it now, and we'll get some audience input too. For me, my returns hover between 5 and 10%, depending on the product. It's typically lower on physical products than it is digital. Digital is a little bit higher, but it's typically not 10%. There's something interesting, Joe Sugarman, that I learned from him, and he said if you don't have a high, like if you only have a 1% return rate, you might think you're doing really good, but you're not selling hard enough. And so I thought that was really interesting. So I don't know what's good or bad. Some people can live with a 50% return rate, and it's just about the metrics and the numbers working for you. I mean, just for me, I'd feel like my product sucked if I had a 50% return rate, and I'd be working a lot harder on stick campaigns, on delivering unadvertised bonuses, on making the product better. But if the numbers work at 50% and those people are happy at it, then that's fine. But for me, if it's above 10%, I think there's something wrong. Yeah, CJ, hold on, let me get you a mic. All right, Michael, yeah, go ahead.
Yannick, when you come up with the number for scarcity, 250 units, is this just an arbitrary number you pick, or is it predicated on the price range you're selling this product at based on past history of sales in that price range? How do you come up with that number?
It's a very scientific formula. I take pi. My birthday plus two.
Which birthday?
Divided by divided by the square root of the circumference of my desk.
No, you don't
want to. No, actually, I do have a way that I've figured out, and it's not that scientific, but typically it's the dollar amount that I want for that product. I also take into account, you know, if I only have possibly 200 people that might be only be interested in this product, then I'm not gonna say let's sell 1,000 of them only. You know, so I think about how hot the potential product would be, and you know, like when we did 750 for the DVDs, I was surprised they didn't sell out faster. It took 6 weeks to sell it, and I don't think I got all the promotion pieces there for you guys, but it's, you know, I was like, what the hell? And so this year we're doing 500 sets, and we're raising the price. It's gonna be the exact same dollar amount. And it's gonna be, so that's one of the things I think about is how much do I want from that particular project?
Yeah, just talking about returns. My first return that I got was 1996. It was from a product. It was a $50 four tape set. And I almost started to cry. It was amazing. And then it was funny because I went home and I started looking at the numbers as how much of this I've sold up to that point. And I had sold 5,000, about 5,000 units. So I had sold about 5,000 units of this before I got my first return. And then what happened, I mean, really, it almost broke me down for like a week. And then what happened was I got my second return of that, and I went and looked at the numbers. I had sold about another 5,000 copies. So I started to notice that about every 5,000 copies of that one product, I would get a return. And now some of these returns, they weren't even open, or someone didn't like one word in the whole program, and they sent it back, you know, whatever the case is. But I started to realize, kind of like what Joe Sugarman said, I guess, is that I started getting excited when I got returns, because that means I was getting more of that product out there in the marketplace. But in general, though, my returns overall, 1.3%. So we already know I'm not selling too hard because I don't even have a sales letter. So
No, but you bring up a great point, Jerry, is you know, a lot of people get emotionally involved in their returns. 2 days before the seminar, the copywriting course came to my house and the DVDs came, because otherwise I wouldn't have had them to show you guys. I get them all sent back to my fulfillment house. So we put a note in there. I wish I had a note with me. Maybe I'll put it up on the resource page. But it, you know, it says basically like what I showed you guys in the copywriting course. It has testimonials in there. It says something like, you know, 97.2% of our customers love all our products, but in case, you know, it doesn't quite fit, you know, please send it back here. And it tells them send it back to Texas, because I don't like getting big boxes on my porch. I don't want that. I used to get that for a while, and then we changed it, and it was just, well, plus that's how, why we had, you'll see the sale in the manual too, when we had to do these sales, like Missy getting pissed off at me about the basement getting filled up with all this stuff. And so now we don't have that going on, and you know, it's just don't get attached to it emotionally, just like you can't get attached emotionally to your customers doing what you tell them that they have to do in the info product. And you know, you want to make sure they get the value and what you're delivering to them, but if it's, you know, you can't get hung up on it. You can't. So it's, some people are going to return it for, you know, the cover doesn't look right, or you said something wrong, like you said, Jerry, or whatever the case is. You know what? You can't please everybody. And it's good to offend some people and polarize some people. So you want people that really, really like you, and some people that don't like you that much. It's all right.
Just one little tip I learned. I used to send out an info product in a nice box, and I noticed that all the returns were coming back in that same box.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So I started shipping it out in one of those craft padded envelopes. When you tear it open, it all falls apart on you, and the little return weight went way down.
Yeah, yeah. A friend of mine, Brian Sachs, has the most amazing package. He calls it the the self-destruct package. And it's true. They'll say, if you send, like, we have to send the copywriting course in a box. I mean, it's like impossible to send it in something else. But they'll send it right back in your box. Some people, when we had returns for this, they would just slap a little label right on this briefcase and send it back to us. I'm like, damn. So if you make it easy for them to return it, it'll be easy. That's another reason, by the way. It's kind of a little bit under the radar reason, but if you have all these pieces and they got to return the whole thing, you know, this thing, the audio CDs in their car, this thing's like underneath their couch, you know, they have no clue where everything is, and so that's going to delay a return. So that's one thing.
Maybe you're going to cover it in the warranty section. What about live events?
live events?
In terms of returns, in terms of people can sell. Okay.
Yeah, actually I don't have anything on that. We can talk about it now. It depends on how ballsy you are. You want to make the guarantee. I've always found that the better the guarantee, the more people I'll get into the door. I think I did an interesting thing at one seminar where I asked them how many people came here because of the guarantee, and it was like a third of the room or 25% of the room. And we had last year at the first underground, I had one refund, and then I had two other people who just said it wasn't quite right for them, it was too advanced or whatever the case was. One guy was just upset. And then this last year, zero refunds. And we had even more people there. And I've always been a very strong, let's talk about refunds for a second. I don't get emotionally attached to the refunds. And like, once again, I don't wanna see the refunds. I don't wanna know about them. I just wanna know if we go above a certain percentage or all of a sudden we sold 500 units and 450 came back, then we got a problem. Just write the check or do the charge back, or not the charge back, do the refund. Other thing that you want to think about, like let's say in your product, you could say, okay, 60-day guarantee and that's it. Or you do 6-month guarantee, or you do a year guarantee. Actually, let's turn off the tape for this one. You can turn the tape back on now, Andrew. This is where you guys get excited. All right, so with the refunds, a lot of people get really like just hung up, like they want it, it's their ego going for it, and it's like they want, all right, this guy, this son of a bitch asked for a refund after 91 days, screw him, I'm not giving him a refund, and he sent back the box, it's all smelly, it smelled like smoke, and there's some animal in there, or I don't know what's going on, I'm not giving him a refund, screw him, and you know what, that only leads to trouble. It's the worst thing you can do when you get your ego involved in it, and it's just go away. We have actually a list in our software program, our Synergix shopping cart software, that we blacklist certain people from never buying from us again, and screw them. I just want to get rid of them, because the people who are like that will become a bigger and bigger nuisance, and they'll just do all kinds of stuff to screw with your business, and it's not worth it. Who cares? Give them back a refund, even if it's, I've given back refunds on like our super high end. I think we had a refund for an apprentice program just because someone ran into financial problems. I mean, they'll come up with all kinds of reasons why they want a refund. Tax season, right around April 15th, we'll get refunds. Christmas time, you know what? It doesn't matter. You can't get emotionally hung up on it. Like you can't get emotionally hung up on if people are going to do the stuff that's in your info product. So just deal with it. And the quicker you can get the refund out, the better. Yeah.
I wanted to agree and amplify the point that you made about selling strongly enough. We have one particular product for real estate investors called 6 Steps to 7-Figure Loans. And every time we've presented that in an audience, somebody who already owned it has bought it again. And one person has not even returned it the second time, but most people suddenly get home, they go, oh, I already have this, and then they want to return it. So it truly is a case of needing to sell, and we're about a little bit lower than the top percentage you named, but a minimum of 3% returns on our products.
The returns are going to happen, and when you get that first return, it's like, oh, shoot.
And the other point on that is that if you don't price it high enough, you don't have to sell at all. It's just going to sell itself. So we have to sell a little more. It's a little harder to sell something when the price is where it really ought to be. And I think that's part of the lesson too.
Yeah, I mean, the refund, like for your live events, like you're talking about, Marco, I mean, I would do a really strong guarantee. I've done, like Ryan has a guarantee. I've done a similar one where it's like, you sit through the whole thing, and if you don't like it, or actually mine is the first day, his is the whole thing. Sit through the whole thing, you don't like it, I'll pay for your airfare and refund you back. Mine is, and then he had that double guarantee, which is really strong. If you don't think it's the best training in pre-foreclosure, I think that's pretty ballsy. And mine, sit through the first day of the seminar, you don't like it, we'll give you back your money and your hotel. So I'm a big proponent of the guarantees, and especially if you know you're gonna deliver good stuff there.
I will almost always say, please keep the product, as my way of saying thanks for giving it a fair go. And sure as anything, they come; those people come back and buy from me again.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, is it a $1,000 product?
Or no, I've done that even with $500 products, but I don't get many returns on those.
All right, so everybody buy from Clifford. Ask for a refund. No.
But no, it does work.
Right.
Quick question. Matt Fury, he goes like the complete opposite direction, where he just says straight up, no guarantee, no refund. You do not get your money back. Have you tried something similar? And I mean, obviously, it's working for him.
Matt's really brilliant at no guarantees. It fits his model. It fits his personality. It fits his marketplace of using a lot of intimidation copy. And that's a technique I talked about in the Secret Society newsletter for those who got that issue. But it's a great, like I showed you that Gary Bensavenga seminar. Yeah, his bullet seminar. And he does a masterful job of using intimidation copy, but making it nice. And you know, you can do it's all about positioning. I mean, the guarantee is also a part of your positioning. So you can go, you know, one end of extreme, you know, lifetime guarantee. I know somebody that offers a lifetime guarantee, or the whole other opposite end of the spectrum of, dude, I know what this stuff does. I don't care if if you're gonna buy it. There's no guarantee. All right, we're through with seminar manual number one. Yeah. And Marlon said he was gonna come up and teach seminar manual number two. We got a lot of stuff to cover too. All right, let's talk about reprint and resale rights real fast. This is another area that could be pretty lucrative, where, you know, understanding what they are plus what's going on now in the marketplace. So resale rights is when you purchase or you sell off, let's just take it from one area. If you purchase the rights from somebody else to resell their product, that's what it is. And now, and the other side, flip side, is you can sell resale rights to other people. Universal rights is a term that Tony Blake made up when he saw what I was doing with million-dollar emails and autoresponder magic. And what happened there was you bought it for $17 and $19, and you automatically got resale rights. And you could give it away or sell it, and anybody else who got it could get resale rights, and just kept going on from there. We'll talk about that. Master resale rights is if I sold to you, Marco, either in a region or all over the globe, I said, look, I'm gonna sell you master resale rights. That means you can go out and resell rights. So if I have a product, my training clowns product, and I said, look, I'm gonna make you master resale rights, so then you can go out anywhere and sell resale rights to the training clown product, and other people can then sell that. All right, so why make resale rights available at all? It's a quick money up front. That's probably the biggest reason is it's a big cash surge coming in. And the price is dependent on the selling price of the material and, of course, the subject matter. So once again, going back to those subjects that sell really well, and also, you know, can we show a return on investment? So I can sell a resale rights to a money-making product for probably more than a resale rights to my clown product. List building. It also has potential to build up your list. The more you get your resale rights product out there, as long as you put stuff inside the product, that's going to suck up some of those names, and we'll talk about that. Back-end profit potential. There's additional back-end profit potential, either from that list or from inside the product itself. Name recognition. When I released Autoresponder Magic, I mean, that got my name like just everywhere. Now, I don't think you could do the same thing today, and we'll talk about that, this model. So Autoresponder Magic is the first one. It was $17. It was a compilation product where I was totally pretty much unknown, and I went to people like Terry Dean and I don't even know who else was in there, Bob Gatchel and a bunch of other people who were doing really well online, and asked them for their autoresponders. And they sent me their autoresponder sequences and just created it from there, just an ebook, a little PDF. And like I said, it was $17. Then, you know, people could get the resale rights to it and they could give it away as much as they wanted. And then in the back was a $199 back-end gold version is what I called it, where you could get your links customized inside the book. So all these products, like Terry Dean's product, I had my affiliate link in there when he's showing his autoresponder sequence. And I was really surprised, like within 5 minutes of selling it, we were getting these $199 orders from the front of the book and the back of the book, telling people, them getting a customized version of it. So it was pretty cool. Same thing with $1 million emails, but this time I increased the price a whopping $2. I probably could have priced it more. I didn't even do any price testing. We'll talk about that later on too. So here's some benefits to universal rights. Name recognition, like I said, you get your name everywhere, list building, if you do it right. So inside Autoresponder Magic, we had nothing in there to capture names, which was dumb. $1 million emails, we had something in there, which was a little bit smarter. Right now, if you were gonna do it, I'd make people go to a web page to get the product and download it. Back-end ongoing commissions, I still make commissions from these products like from 5 years back. So big pitfalls though. Product becomes almost instantly devalued. It's like, as soon as it hits the marketplace, it's like everybody started giving away Autoresponder Magic. It's like, it didn't even matter what they're selling. They're selling like, how to lose weight. Hey, and you get a bonus, Autoresponder Magic. Marlon was telling me, he called me up a couple times on the phone and he'd be like, yeah, my mailman's selling me Autoresponder Magic. Lack of product reseller control. You don't know who the resellers are because it's, everybody got rights to it. Spam complaints. We were getting big time spam complaints from me and also lots of the people that were in the sales letter. Just possible legal action. I mean, we don't even need to talk about that unless you want to turn off the tape. But we don't need to. It's like, Frank Curran got really screwed by the FTC for basically doing this and taking some of our stuff and bundling it in there. And so, just know that that's a real repercussion. But interesting what's going on. It had 15,700 references to Autoresponder Magic, 23,000 $1 million emails. Those are just websites that have them. So that it's just way, way, way above that. So some numbers, these are old numbers. But it's still selling. I took off all resale rights on those products actually now after the Curran scare. And we still sell it as just a product. Let's see. All right, here's a different model. This is the 33 days model. I'd consider doing this one today.
You mentioned that the first model probably would not work today, and right. The reason for that is the legal issue?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be hesitant to do it unless I had way more control over the
issue.
You can turn off the tape for a quick second. All right, 33 days resale rights model. Ebook is $29, actually it's $39 now without resale rights. And then I'll show you how we upsell them into resale rights. A $99 silver version is what we call it, a generic version. And then a $299 gold version to sell a customized version of this, website and promotion material included. This is actually pretty important. If you're gonna do resale rights, you really wanna give them tools, everything that they possibly need to get going and sell this thing. And once again, we had I don't know if I have any, I have some pages I think in there as examples. We did it a lot better. I mean, every time we learned more and more and how to make it better and more lucrative, like the affiliate links were cloaked, so people couldn't just, take off your affiliate ID. They were part of the product. It was like, hey, day one, you really need a domain name, go here. And now just recently we signed up for Wild West Domains, which is a pretty good program. And what we did is we bought our own domain name and then we just redirected to it. So it's ultimatediscountdomains.com and it's redirected to our Wild West affiliate account. And that makes us like a couple $100 every month for nothing, just for being part of that book on day one. Hey, you need domain names. And it's just really, telling them, it's leading them instead of like before it was just, okay, here's a sales letter that somebody else put out, here's a great email, and then is there a link? So, and then the $299 gold version, so we increased the price where people could get a customized version of the book. So a couple of benefits, once again, same stuff, name recognition, list building, back-end ongoing commissions, more control of product and reseller. That's really important. I knew every single reseller for this, either as a silver reseller, so they could sell the generic book, or as a gold reseller, and they could sell the customized book. So that way, when we got a complaint or something was going on, we could handle it. And in nuts and bolts, we'll talk about what happens when people rip you off and stuff. I got some examples for you. Resale rates pitfall. Some people start giving away the product for free, possible reduction in profit. I definitely think that we don't make all the amount of money we possibly can by just selling the $29 or $39 product itself, because it's out there in a lot of places with other people selling it. And then some people will also give it away for free, and we'll talk about some other things.
I had a quick question. How does this get around what you were talking about earlier?
What is it?
Like the possible legal action. How does this model avoid that?
How does it avoid it? Because I know every reseller. So at least I have the opportunity to turn them off. So before, I have no clue who's doing what.
Oh, because you're not giving them the right to resell.
Right, they don't have, it's not an ongoing, it's not like a third, fourth, eighth, 15th generation resell rate product. So, let's see, these are old numbers, but yeah, so a lot less viral than the other way, 5,930. These are old numbers, but it's still a nice six-figure franchise in our little oil well example. That'd be a medium-sized, Derek. All right, high-priced resell rights. If you got a physical product, this might be an idea for you to consider. We did this with our six-week Instant Internet Profits course, where we gave away 50 people, gave them the rights for $2,000, essentially. And the course sells for $697. Actually, this is not true anymore. It is now part. It used to, when we first opened it, it wasn't part of our affiliate program to limit competition. But then after a year, I added it to our program. We gave them some tested promotions. I gave them complete offline, online promotional stuff. I mean, it's a really thick operations manual. I mean, for $2,000, I really thought that they should get all kinds of tools and things that they needed. They also, since it was a physical product, I need to make sure that they had an easy way. We fulfill for them if they wanted, for just, you know, we only make like $100, $150 profit on that, or $100 profit, I can't remember what it is. Or we give them the masters and they can go find fulfillment by themselves. All right, so some agreements, some limitation stuff. I got some examples, I think, for you. Once again, I'm not an attorney, but some common points are no eBay. I've changed that now to say now it's no eBay unless it's a fixed price. No packaging together. So, you know, I want that product. It depends how, like for the high-end physical product, I want to make sure that that had retained a lot of value. So I had a lot more stringent limitations than I did on eBooks and things like that. So I said no packaging together. That had to be the main product. You could offer additional bonuses with it. No giving it away for free, cannot sell the rights to others. You can't change the format, so if it was an ebook, you can't change it into like a physical book and then start selling it on Amazon or whatever that is. You don't own the copyright in any way. And I got some examples here for you. Well, we'll keep going on rights. All right, you can do also exclusive rights. You could do by country. Like I've just finally licensed instant sales letters into Japan just a couple weeks ago, and the guy's actually already selling and making me money. I get a percentage royalty back for every sale that he makes. Now, I've been approached a ton of times to translate stuff into different languages and let people sell it there, and I've never said yes because they've never had distribution. This guy had a big customer list of like 10 or 15,000 people already, so it was like almost a no-brainer for him to go out and sell this product. And you know, everything's negotiable about who pays translation rights, who would, you know, what the royalty percentage is. It's typically between maybe 5% and 15% of gross. If you're gonna get an upfront against royalties, so some kind of fee upfront. When I've done licensing deals, you know, maybe it's not the best thing, but I've pretty much always just foregone any kind of advance payment and just said, you know, just screw it. I'd much rather get a bigger percentage on the royalty. You can do rights by niche. I mean, almost in a way, that's what I've done with Chris, sort of, is, but since he was part of the apprentice program, there's a royalty payment in there, but essentially, I've given him the rights to use instant sales letters, which is a trademark product, We'll talk about trademarks later on. And he uses that for the MLM niche. So it's instant MLM sales letters. You can take any one of your products, niche it to a specific niche, let that person go out and sell it for dentists or for chiros or for working home moms or whatever, and let them have exclusive rights access there. A couple agreement points. I think we covered most of them. The other things that are important. I have an example of an agreement in here, but stuff that you're not liable for what they do. All right, here's page 587 is a whole case study for you on $1 million emails and autoresponder magic. So it talks about like page 588, you see, okay, hey, you get free resale rights and redistribution rights to this ebook. Then page 589 is the sales letter to sell the rights. 592 are the resale rights terms and conditions for 33 days, just some real simple ones. 593 is the upsell from just a regular, we'll talk about increasing transaction value. And so this is the upsell. So if somebody clicks on, hey, I'm gonna buy 33 days, the next page is, would you like a better deal? And it sells them the rights. 595 is the way that we build our email list from everyone who sells the 33 days product. Now, if they're a gold reseller, they get the opportunity to customize this little deal, and we give them the autoresponder, so we don't get those names anymore. But we've built up a pretty nice sized list just from this. We call it coaching, where that every week or every couple days you get an autoresponder essentially from us that says, hey, by now you should have your website built. Hey, by now you should be doing this. 596, you can see how it's all the resources, the affiliate links are totally integrated into 33 days. 596 at the bottom is some of the sales copy for the Advanced Instant Internet Profits course when we sold the resale rights. 597, 598, it tells you what they got as part of the package. 598 at the bottom, this is the form that's included in their fulfillment package, so they can just simply fax us back when they have an order that comes in. And then 600 is an example of the operations manual that we give them and some of the promotion material. All right. Page 608, I think, is the entire sales letter for that resale rights product. This is a direct mail piece of that product. We did something cool where we actually mailed to our best customers in a little bank bag, and that worked extremely well, like a 10-to-1 return. 618 is this is the actual license agreement with a couple things X'd out and so on for the Japanese guy. So you'll find that interesting. Oh, one of the really important deal points when you're doing licensing, I think so anyway, is that you want to set a minimum performance, and that if you don't meet that minimum performance, or that licensee doesn't meet that minimum performance, the rights come back to you, because you don't want to just have you don't want to have somebody tie up like I once licensed a product to a guy who wants to sell it to the veterinary marketplace. And we had a performance guarantee on it. If he didn't, it was either units or dollars, I can't remember, but he missed it twice. And I'm like, you're not doing much with it, I'm taking it back. So now I had the opportunity to go out and relicense it to somebody else or let it sit on my closet shelf like I did. But you have the microphones? Yeah.
On page 598, it says, this also gives me the opportunity to capture names of buyers I would normally get. Now, to be fair, I would not email their customers, but I would direct mail them. Do you disclose it up front?
I don't remember if I do disclose it or not. There's several ways of doing it. You can just be Machiavellian about it and just say, okay, I'm just, as soon as those people come in, those are my customers now, and I'm going to email them and mail them. I thought that there's some gray area there with emailing them, so the only thing we've ever done is direct mail them. I don't remember if I disclosed it or not. I don't know.
What about piracy? People just copying and selling your stuff?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that later in the nuts and bolts section. And I have some good examples so you guys can fight back, because that's a real problem. Yeah. All right, so any other license? The biggest thing in this agreement is really the performance
as far as some of my programs are translated in other languages and all that, just like what you were talking about. I guess the only difference from what you're doing is you want a higher royalty, so you don't want anything up front. I want a higher royalty too, but I usually take a deposit against royalties up front, one-time deposit up front. So that way, if they don't do nothing, at least I know I have something that I've already started with. But it goes against royalties coming up. As far as the rights, I think it's important for everyone to understand is that if I want to do something special with that particular program, because I typically don't, buy rights to something that if it's kind of costly, I'm not going to buy the rights to something if I can't do something special with it of some sort.
So customize it for yourself, you mean?
I'm sorry?
Customize it so you're not selling this.
I want to be able to customize it some way. So whether or not it's CDs of some sort that someone is selling, I want to be able to come in and do my own introduction. I want to be able to clean it up a little bit if I want to. I want to be able to, you know, just do whatever you want. So there's a lot of things. If it's a book, for example, that you're buying the rights to, I want to be able to put it on audio. I want to be able to turn it into a home study course. I might want to be able to make a derivative product from that original product. So I might end up paying more money than what they're originally asking for to be able to do some of these things. So I like to have as much flexibility as I possibly can. And it's benefited, it's been very beneficial. This whole rights idea, I'll probably make an extra $300,000-$400,000 next year from doing these type of things with the rights.
You know, like Jerry's saying, he's got this customer list. And so if he licenses a product, he wants to make it unique, which is very, very smart and not compete against everybody else. And you know, making a whole lot of money doing it in a unique way, and I'm very much into that. So if you're doing something the exact same, it's not worth it.
Is the person who's buying the resale rights responsible for duplication?
I gave them an option. They got the masters, but they also got that form and an explanation of how to get us to fulfill. They want us to fulfill. They give us their credit card for each order, and we charge them. Actually, I don't know if Chris Tuttle's in the room or not, but his mom and dad are licensees of mine for the 6-week course. They just sell it at their events every once in a while, and they'll send those, just fax us in those forms, and we'll fulfill for them. When I do something like really more like this, then I want royalties when I think that there's a lot more potential out there. Now, you could also do the exact same thing. You could sell, you know, for $50,000 and get royalty back end percentage, or get that $50, like Jerry said, it's the advance against the royalties. So it's any way to do it. It's exact same stuff, yeah. But some of the key points are the agreement points, and then also giving them enough tools, promotional material, that they can go out and sell it very easily.
So it's something that is done.
Yeah, you already have it done.
Licensing the live events.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yep.
A lot of money can be made of rights.
In fact, at the last event that we had Alex speak at our real estate event, he saw one of the rights strategies that we use, which is while we're recording the training/sales presentation for a product from the platform, I make as part of the offer, I will give you resale rights to this DVD that we're making together right now. And then that becomes attached to their affiliate link through, coded sales letters or direct mail pieces or postcards that we give them. And what's great is, and I know we're about to move into pricing with you, but from the value proposition, again, when you're showing ROI, if you're able to show somebody, look, you get them to agree, how many of you would agree this presentation was worth at least $497, you know, just in and of itself, or whatever really the price of the seminar was, you should mark it about there when you're on the platform. Then, how would you like the right to sell it for $97 and keep 100% of it? Then when you invest in this program, you'd only have to sell one a month, and you'd have 100% ROI by the end of the month. So that becomes part of how we do it for the platform.
Rights are great. They're a great like bait for, especially if you're selling anything money-making related. Now, if you're selling to consumers, like if you're selling them Get Fit While You Sit, it'd be a lot harder for me to sell rights. Hey, while you're getting slim, you can also be reselling this. And, you know, making money is always a great proposition, but it won't be as strong in certain marketplaces. All right, let's move on to pricing. You know, we talked a lot about this actually yesterday, so we'll probably blow through some of this unless you guys got a lot more comments on it. But how to price your info product, that is important. So we talked about yesterday that there's a psychological factor to pricing. You know, Mercedes is not priced the same as Hyundai, and there's a reason for that. Just like why Rolls-Royce is not priced the same as Hyundai, even though it probably cost them roughly, you know, it's not like 50 times more to make a Rolls-Royce than it is a Hyundai, probably. And so there's real cachet value to high pricing. Jay Abraham has done this extremely well with almost everything being super high priced, and that's set him up as the high price expert. and he could get $25,000 for a seminar and $10,000 and all these things. So it's also based on return on investment. So, you know, like we talked about, if we're selling a fitness product, it's probably not going to be as much, we can't price it as high as if we're selling a how to make money in the stock market product. You know, Ryan, where's Ryan? He's a great example because he can make, what he teaches people, they can make $50,000, $100,000 on one pre-foreclosure. You know, it's a great argument that you should spend $25,000 with me to learn how to do it all day long. So based on ROI, also based on pain, like we talked about, stop your divorce, that's very painful. The trichotillomania is very painful. So those can command higher prices. You'll find some really interesting things too when you start messing around with price, and it's not always. Sometimes you'll find you increase the price and it increases the profits, and you'll even increase the number of sales sold. It's really, really intriguing. I did price tests with instant sales letters first. We went from $29.95 to $39.97. Bless you. $39.97, we had an increase in profits and an increase in sales. Then we went to $49.95 at the low end, and we actually had a decrease in profits and decrease in sales. Or sorry, we had a slight increase in profits at $49.95, but a decrease in number of units. And since that's more of a front-end product for me, I wanted more units. So you can also play with that a little bit for pricing, you know, depending on what is your end goal. Okay, is this gonna be a front end, so we wanna get as many people into our oil derricks as possible? Or is this going to be, you know, the end all be all, and we want to maximize our profits there? This is the other thing I think I told you guys before. I always try and make sure that this is something in the forefront of my mind, is to try and deliver a tremendous value. And I look at that in my plan. It's something written in my planner as one of my values, that I get rich by enriching others 10 times to 100 times in return. So I'm pretty cognizant of thinking about this, and I just think it just makes perfect sense. You know, us as info marketers, we're not going to get rich typically with just one little oil derrick. We need a whole bunch of them. And the way that we get a whole bunch of them and a lot of happy, loyal customers is that force field and delivering value is one of those things that we talked about. And it's just, you know, I heard this first, I think, from Earl Nightingale, and he's talking about that if you provide exceptional value, the world has to provide you an exceptional reward. And, you know, we can talk about some of this offline, the more woo-woo stuff, but the value is real hard. I mean, if you're over-delivering, it just makes sense that your customers are going to love you and they'll buy more from you. Pricing, you also want to consider when you're pricing, all right, if I'm going to have, like, let's say we're going to do $3,000 seminar, okay, but I think, okay, what's my bottom line price? Well, I want to have enough in that $3,000 that I can reward some of my maybe newsletter subscribers or some of my best customers and give them some kind of good discount. So you want to think about that, that the pricing has to have enough in there. It's also got to have enough in there if you're going to have an affiliate program or partners promoting it. So it's got to have enough in there to make you happy once you give them 30, 40, 50%. And we'll talk about affiliates later today. We talked about this, positioning psychology of price. Payment plans, this is something that not everybody gets all the time, or I think it's on the checklist, hopefully, but can we offer payment plans? Most of the time, Americans and pretty much people around the world have been taught that it's not the price, it's the payments. So, you know, you walk into a car lot, it's just how much can you afford to pay, you know, for a new car? You know, for $299, I can get you into any one of these cars. It's just $299 for 87 years. But so what? So payment plans are important. If you break it, you'll typically sell more if you break stuff up into 2, 3, 4 pay. And a lot of people get worried that people aren't going to make good on their payments. And I have very little default rates. It's maybe 5%. I mean, of course, you got people that have cars that get declined and so on. You got to go chase them. And we'll talk about administrative stuff. It's not that big a deal, I think, to offer payments. Plus, it gives you a little bit more continuity and more steady income. So I'm a big fan of payment pricing. Anytime, I mean, it all depends on your marketplace. Like for some marketplaces, over $50 is expensive. And you can double the price of your product. Let's say $49 is a typical price point in your marketplace. You can make it 2 payments or 3 payments of $49, and now you've made double or triple your money. And when I look at payment plans, I want to make sure that first payment covers everything. And if that doesn't cover it, then I feel a little exposed. We talked about this, testing price. All right, anyone have some interesting stories on testing price or payment plans or anything like that? Yeah, great. Let's pass the mic to...
Has anyone in the room ever tried Can Evoy Software Make Your Price Sell?
Okay, a couple people have. George has.
Tried it a long time.
Hold on. Let's get you a mic. I'll give you my experience with it, too.
We actually tried it, and it worked the way it said it would work, and we actually set a price based on what it said, and it worked. We actually sold items based on what they said, but we didn't get a chance to test it with all the different price points. But the survey and everything that they guaranteed with the product was, it worked quite well. And I tried to get the other product you talked about, but it wasn't available at the same time.
Price it right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give you my viewpoint on pricing surveys is I don't like them because it's in a vacuum. There's no copy. With copy and a sales, you know, even from a stage or wherever, you can make a sales proposition that has an incredible value build. And if you just tell someone, hey, how much would you pay for a product that teaches you how to get more links to your website? You know, they don't have anything to reference it with. There's no bonuses attached to it. There's no, you know, all the copy, all the cool stuff we can do to make it seem even better. I think that price is just, you know, it's a starting point, but I don't like the pricing survey stuff. I want people to reach into their wallet and vote that way.
We, you know, part of the reason I'm here is because of the fact that I saw what you did with the apprentice program. Until we saw that, we didn't realize that was kind of the outer boundary. If you ask the people, they'll always, at least in my crowd, I can't speak for everybody else, even my crowd, which is used to paying a lot of money, they'll come up with some stupid lowball offer. If we ask them, they'll probably say, yeah, $299. I mean, that's like 1% of what we're charging them, for God's sakes. You know, I'm not going to ask them what they're going to pay for it.
In my training company 10 years ago, the merchant accounts would give you a limit, typically, on how much you can do on a monthly basis. And my limit was like $30,000 a month. But we excelled the $30,000 a month. So I saw, and it started going over, they give you a deviation of about 15% or so. And as it started to increase, I'm like, oh, what am I gonna do here? I got all this money that people wanna pay me and I don't have, you know, I wanna be able to collect it. So I created a payment plan just to break it up in two payments. That's the reason why I started doing it initially. But then I noticed that more people start buying. So I noticed it was a double-edged sword, but then I also noticed that, yes, you're going to get some people that maybe their second payment won't go through or something. So what I found out is all you have to do typically is email them, call them, something, just something real simple, but make sure you have something in place where you can do that. And most of the time, they want to pay you the money.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have $200,000 or $300,000 a year of non-collectibles because of that. But because of our people that I've hired a full-time person to do stuff like that, she collects over $100,000 of that still. So we still go with, you know, we miss out on some money, but there's more that we get now that we wouldn't have gotten without the payment plan. But the first payment, like Yannick said, has to pay for everything. So as long as, and you don't send them out nothing until you get that first payment at least. So that's the key there. And testing, I'm always testing. You have to know your audience, know who's in your audience. And tomorrow I'm going to Chicago. I got a seminar in Chicago. And this audience, a little bit, my typical price point is $400 or $500. That's my typical price points for my market. But the market, the people tomorrow are a little bit higher level of consciousness. So I'm going to do an $800 or $900 package for these people. It's going to be about 300 people, and I'm going to do about $80,000 to $120,000 with that small price point tomorrow.
So, look at all the infomercials. Almost a bunch of them are doing payment plans now. QVC does payment plans. I mean, learn from those people. Yeah, multiple credit cards. Yeah, we talked about that yesterday.
Two things, Yannick, that I wanted to add real quick. One is that we found, like you mentioned, that when we do surveys, when we've done legitimate surveys asking about price, that we've always charged higher than what everybody seems to say, because we know that with the sales letter, you know, they're going to be much more likely to buy. The other thing that we started doing that's worked out really well for us is that we use the price question in the survey to kind of set up their perspective. So we talk, you know, we put in prices that are higher than what we're planning, and then when we offer it lower, you know, people, they jump at it because we got them thinking that we were going to be charging this. So we found that works pretty well for us.
That's great. Send it back. Do you have something, Nathan?
I actually started selling CDs. It was the same book I sell now for $30, which is actually going up to $50 or $60 tomorrow. because we were talking to lunch the other day, and I'm like, you know, I'm not selling this for enough. But I was selling with a lot more bonus, a lot more material and everything else for like $9. And I was like, oh, you know, my target market's not going to pay any more than that. I put it up to 29, my sales tripled. So it's just perceived value, and it's extremely important. Also, Best Buy, the retail store, I know they actually have specific stores laid out for payment plans. You know, target markets where they know that middle-class income families around. They really love that kind of stuff. It really does really well for them.
We raised the price 4 times in 1 year, so I don't know. Probably we priced it too low at first, but I don't know what the frequency could be.
Yeah, that's great. And 4 times in 1 year is awesome.
Yeah.
Did you make more money?
It's always same people, the same number of people.
Yeah. 10. I mean, most of us in the room are guilty of underpricing. And I talked about that yesterday. It's more what's inside our own head, what's going on inside our head, and what the marketplace will bear.
So you think we wait in 3 months, 4 months, and then you can wait even, necessary or not?
I mean, I always like to have, if I'm going to do a price increase, just sometimes I'll just do it and, you know, we'll see what happens. But sometimes I'll do it and say, look, well, this is the reason we're increasing the price, and if you want to get in on the low price, which, by the way, will be just a huge surge of orders at the low
price. And
this
is useful also for promotion.
Yeah.
And roll now because it's... Second question, very short, is payment plans for business to business. Are they working or not?
The only experience I have business to business is the cosmetic surgeons and the doctors. We do payment plans for them. They like it, but
they like that?
They're consumers. I mean, for businesses, probably. Are you getting a PO number or are you getting... you're getting a purchase order?
Sure, usually.
Yeah, so it's not, you're giving them net 30 or net, stretches into net 90. I mean, when I used to sell to doctors, like medical equipment, we'd give them, I always sold more. I introduced this to my dad's business. We did a 3-pay plan and it sold more. I said, look, you can divide it up a third, a third, a third, and it always sold more. Yeah, but if it's a big company,
There are two sets of consumers that we're thinking about when we've got our website there. Those that have already been to our site and seen the price, that I build a date in and say, by this date, I have to raise the price. And those that are coming for the first time, and you don't care then. Raise the price 12 times a year. Raise it every week at that point, because they don't know what the other price is. Yeah. And then there's also some theory, and it works real well in our photography area, where it's automatic pricing, this guy calls, automatic pricing increase. And he always talks about when you're watching the Rose Bowl parade and you're watching the fireworks go off, if you're really timid, only raise it 10%. If you're a little more ballsy, raise it 20%, and just know that you're going to do it, because if not, you get lazy, you don't know what your price point is, and then you don't raise the price, and you're losing an awful lot.
I just wanted to talk about the splitting, you know, having payment plans. I found increased response significantly, and then when I added free shipping to the one installment price, that actually boosted overall, it slightly reduced payments, as it would, but it actually boosted sales overall even further.
Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't mention that. We typically will give some kind of extra, like we did in the Wrights product for $19.95. We gave them an extra bonus, which was a free teleconference call if they paid in full. But if they paid in payments, they didn't get that. Like free shipping, we do that sometimes with the copywriting course that they pay in full. I think, we do that with the copywriting course, which is a big fat shipping bill. And so they get that for free if they don't pay in the payment plan.
Yeah, you definitely got to test this stuff, because payment plans, for me, they don't increase response at all. So that's one thing. Another thing is, sure, you have to deal with your marketplace, but I think a lot of times most, if not all of your competitors are always underpricing. So what I did was, when I first started out, the typical price points on a DVD, it's like $20. Right, I came out and I'm letting everybody know I'm selling mine for $97, from $20 to $97. Everybody's like, "You're crazy! It's not gonna happen." Well, sure enough, $97. We, quickly started blowing everybody out of the water. Now, other competitors are raising their prices little by little, but they're raising. So then I went up to $127 as soon as I saw them changing. It didn't reduce response. In fact, the $127 beat out the $97. So then what I started doing was, literally, I was working, and every week I was changing the price. Every week. Lowering it, raising it, putting it back. I mean, all sorts of things. I had some people buy at $147. I had some people buy at nearly $200. I mean, it just went up and down, up and down. some people complained, of course, you know, but at that point you gotta say you have to know how to deal with it, and it's if you don't have the stomach for dealing with people saying, oh, this isn't fair, I bought it for 147, 2 weeks later is, you know, 97, what's going on here? You just gotta deal with it. For me, I didn't mind. I could just say, well, look, I can either refund you or give you half off discount on your next purchase. What do you want? And usually they said, all right, give me the half off on the next one, and so it didn't reduce that transaction at all. So.
Another thing that I'd consider would be just giving them whatever the lowest price was, or just give them back their money for that, and make them feel good. Just let them know, hey, I'm testing price out, and just be just upfront about it. One other thing I was going to mention about premium pricing, like Fernando, you were saying, you always raised your price, so you're above and beyond what the other competitors are, which is great positioning. I mean, I almost in all marketplaces, I'd rather be the high price person than the low price person, because if you're only basing your pricing, if you're going to sell it on volume and try and make a couple pennies or a couple dollars, it's a tough gig. With info products, you know, we have great margins, so it's not as bad. Like, you know, Nathan, you're saying you're selling your deal for $9. It costs you maybe a dollar for the CD-ROM. So it's still a 9-to-1 return, but when you raise it up to 30, now you got all these other things going for you. Like, you can spend more on advertising, you can spend more with affiliates. So there's all kinds of good things that happen from being a premium pricing. Brett?
We recently raised our online trainings from $1,500 to $2,000 and just raised it to $3,000, but we give them a $1,000 scholarship for the first 10 or 20 that sign up. So it's essentially the same price, just a lot more perceived value.
Yeah, you can.
That worked well.
All right, let's talk about testimonials and then we'll take a break. This is an area where I think a lot of info marketers have problems not getting enough, not doing enough with their testimonials. So I'm going to give you a couple ideas on how to get even more, especially even if you're starting from complete ground zero, whether it's a new marketplace or you got no lists or whatever the case is. So review copies are a quick way of doing this. And a big tip here, review copies, I'm talking about giving it to, in any marketplace, there are just the experts or like the people who control the influencers really in the marketplace. You want to give them the review copies if possible. And, you know, it depending on how competitive the marketplace is. Like, I get review copies of stuff sent to me all the time and I just don't have time to review most of it. So it depends on how competitive your marketplace is for reviews and different things like that. One big tip is to actually write the testimonial for the person. And it's not very well known, but a lot of the book blurbs and even the movie blurbs that you see, like, oh, it was awesome, are actually written by a PR firm. And they just get the person to sign off on it. It's okay. It's a lot easier for people to make small edits than it is to write an entire testimonial from scratch. Plus, it gives you the opportunity to inject what you want out of the testimonial, which is another cool advanced tip. Is you want testimonials that will answer objections to your products. And you know, I talk a lot more about that in the copywriting course, but you know, you want, if somebody has an objection that this is too much money, then you want to get, or I'm really skeptical, then you want to get a bunch of testimonials from people that start off with, I was really skeptical and this, and then their story. So review copies are a good place to start. Unsolicited, and then you follow up on them. A lot of times, if you're doing anything good in the marketplace, you'll get emails or faxes or feedback back from some people like, this is really good, you know, I really love this. Now, that's a crappy testimonial, and it's not that great. You want to go back to them and say, hey, you know, thanks very much for this feedback. Can you expand on this, or can I use your comments? And go back to them and try and make it more specific and get some tangible stuff from them. Condition of the sale, this is really interesting. So let's say you're putting out a product and it's maybe a newish product, you got no testimonials for it. You say right up front, look, or you can even give two prices. I've done that too, where it's, okay, $197 and you don't have to give us any comments back, or it's $97 and you have to give us a testimonial back. And you're obligating them to give you a testimonial back. Of course, not everybody will, but if you got, you know, some good follow-up in there, you'll get a nice majority of them to give you some comments back because they've already agreed and now they're committed to it. Automatically generated And that, what I'm talking about is via autoresponder. You want to follow up with them and get their comments. And I have a, and you know, it's also, it can be doubled as a survey and to get testimonials back. I don't, where's Marlon? He's not here. Actually, I learned this from him, so I was going to give him attribution, but he's not here. So I discovered it myself, and I'm the one who originated it. Testimonial contest. You can do contests for your buyers, and these work really, really well. What I like to do with contests, testimonial contests, is we give out, like, everybody who submits a testimonial gets this particular gift. And whoever gives us the best testimonial, or it could be top three testimonials, whatever the case is, they get a much bigger, cooler, awesomer gift. And the bigger the badder, the cooler the gift, the more people are going to be vying for the best testimonial in the world. And you know, they'll really make the things that make testimonials really good. They'll get into specifics. They'll talk about results. They'll talk about their story before and after, and so on. Live event testimonials, video testimonials. I talked about this a little bit, but this is really important. If you do a live event, get those testimonials. Really, you know, make it a point. It's kind of a pain, but people, you know, they'll do you a favor if you've delivered them tremendous value, and they'll do a favor and they'll get on camera and do the testimonial for you. I mean, anything you can do to give your testimonials more life and more proof, really. Like, okay, a written testimonial is okay, an audio testimonial is a little bit better, but a video testimonial along with the written out on your website, that's just even better. I mean, you can't really fake it. Leo, you got something?
I did a testimonial contest. It was a straight drawing of 500 for first, 250 for second, 100 for third. And if you just sent me a testimonial... Dollars.
Okay,
was that your question?
Yeah.
And if you sent me a testimonial, you got one entry in the drawing. If you allowed me to use your full name, I gave you 5 more entries in the drawing. If you allowed me to use the city and state you were from, I gave you 10 more entries in the drawing. And if you sent in your picture and allowed me to use your picture, I gave you 20 more entries in the drawing. So by sending all that information, you could get 36 entries in this drawing for 500, 250, or 100. And that did pretty well.
That's awesome. And study infomercials. They do a great job of condensing down video testimonials really into great snippets. And you know, those don't just happen by accident. There's a lot of coaching going on. And you know, so if you're, you know, now, actually, I wish this guy was here, Stephen Schneider, who puts on like 400 seminars a year about after bankruptcy. He does an incredible job. He has, I think, just one person there who, that's her only job, I think, is getting people out in the hallway and getting those testimonials from those people. I do it, you know, okay. And I get some people to help me out and ask the questions like Chris was doing yesterday that we're getting from here. It's just a great opportunity. Don't let opportunity slip you by doing a live event. Like for my first underground, we didn't capture people and get them out into the hallway or whatever and get their take on it. What I tried to do and I thought would work really well, and it wasn't as well, was we had people come up to the microphone at the end and talk about their big aha, the big idea that they had, which I thought would automatically lead into, yeah, this big idea is going to be worth $500,000 to me, and so on. So some people did that, but it wasn't as powerful. The second year, we actually, you know, got people, you know, whoever came up to me and was like, God, this seminar is amazing. I'm like, oh, you know, will you do me a favor and will you talk to you know, Chris at the end of this break? And then Chris and Rob really helped out and got testimonials from people. Anything you want to add to that, Chris?
I've got very specific questions on a website. I'll send them to a website, I have a form, and I'll say, okay, I'll start off small. You know, what was the greatest thing you got? Like people who went through the thing yesterday with me, or anybody who does it today for testimonials, will see there's certain questions I ask so that the testimonial is stronger. It's not just I love Yannick, I got good things from Yannick. It's you know, what would you say to someone who's skeptical? What would you say to some? So I do the same thing online. Okay, if they're sitting across from somebody who's skeptical, which they would be if your testimonial is sitting there in the sales letter. Okay, what would you say to that person? So now you've got a few sentences of the person saying, gosh, if you're sitting on the fence and you're not sure if you should buy from XYZ or buy from Joe or Chris or Yannick or whatever, then this is what I would say to you because I was in your shoes and this is what it's done for me. Then I ask for specific results. A lot of times for some products, though, like we were talking about yesterday, no one actually does anything with the product, even if there's great information in it. So how do you ask for results? I don't want to ask for results and then have them sit there thinking, gosh, I didn't get any results yet, even though it's usually their fault that they didn't do anything with it. So what I also do is I say, what amount of profits have you received from this already, or what amount of profits do you expect to receive? Like, there were a lot of newbies at the Underground too that we were talking with who were just starting out and they were loving it, but they were just starting out with their business. So instead of saying, okay, what have you received from Yonex, since they were just getting information, we said, what do you expect you'll do in your business over the next 12 months? Because it's a lot more powerful in a testimonial when you have a dollar figure or a certain quantified amount that you can put in there. So if we don't have, like, I do the same thing online with distributors or asking people, okay, if you don't have, how many people have you put in your downline or grown your business by? Well, if they haven't done that, I say, what do you expect to do? You know, how many new people have you put in there, or what do you expect your business will do? What's the single greatest thing you've learned, people? So just, I really go for specifics, but you figure out what your ideal testimonial is for whatever your market is, and you ask those specific questions to get that. Because people sitting up there, there's people yesterday coming up and thanking me because of the questions, and it's a lot easier whenever you can sit there and not just look into a camera and say, okay, right. Hi, my name's Chris Avidowski, and I like Yonex because whatever. I mean, whenever someone's specifically saying, tell me this, tell me this, tell me this, it makes it easier for that person because they want to help you out if they're coming to you, but just lead them through the process. So whether you're doing it at a web forum, a live event, whatever, just ask the questions to get the answers.
And then you can edit it down and piece it together, so just like almost an infomercial.
So they're going to cut, and take whatever you need from it, but it's better to have a lot more specifics and put it into something really powerful than to have some really great or some half-assed kind of 3, 4, 5 paragraphs from people that are like, we really loved him, he's changed our life, he's been great, we made extra money, I got good ideas, I met good people. Well, I mean, it's great. When you start getting a lot of those, though, it's like, where are people really having results or not?
It is better to edit out the questions because it becomes much more powerful.
Right. It doesn't look like you're coaching people.
Exactly. The other thing is, since video testimonials are the best type of testimonials, I've set up a system where anybody with a webcam on their computer can visit a particular site and basically record their testimonial, which then instantly becomes available to you. So if anyone's interested in that.
Maybe we'll add it to the resource page then too. Another interesting thing about testimonials that you can do is you can transfer testimonials, okay? And this is the way you can squeak by. Let's say you got a new product or you got a new event or something, but you don't have testimonials for this particular thing. You know, I think it's perfectly okay to take testimonials that you have from other stuff and transfer it over to here. And I don't have an example of that in your manual, but you might have seen it other stuff. Actually, there is in the yellow manual in the Underground Online Seminar promotion. Look at the sales letter. But so I took testimonials from the birthday bash and from maybe the copywriting seminar and added it there. I think that's perfectly legitimate, and why not leverage the testimonials you got from one thing to another thing? The super duper testimonials and case studies, we'll talk about that in just a second. Here's a couple quick examples for you guys. 623, here's the deal. If you're one of the first 200 to order, I'll personally finance $100 of your purchase right out of my own pocket. That way you get Copywriting Classics for $147. What do I get out of this simple? I need testimonials for my forthcoming worldwide rollout of Copywriting Classics. Since this manual has never been sold before, I obviously don't have any testimonials. Will you help me? I didn't write that. Alex Mendocian wrote that. But there's an example of obligating people to a testimonial. We also obligated people with our first Mind Motivators teleseminar, and we just got tons and tons. So here's another way you can use it. It was inside the sales letter. It was a big part of it, like just a filled in a text box, or sorry, like just a box. And then up here we had a little nav there that they showed that there's like way more testimonials, and they could click on that and see. So we probably had like 10 on the front page, and then every time they clicked on one, there's even more. You know, one big thing you don't want to do is hide the testimonials. I see this a lot where people totally screw up. They got their sales letter or the site selling whatever they're selling, and then they have a nav link that says testimonials. Big mistake. They're not going to get there. I put a whole bunch right in the front, and then if you got way more, you can either have it running down the side, you can have separate pages that are all testimonials, but it's all, you know, back to the more proof, the better. So you notice what we did is, you know, I like to do this a lot with my testimonials, is we'll put almost like a headline on top of them, so it's a little piece of it, and sometimes I'll use yellow highlighter and so on. Take out the best of it, so people, they, you know, they want to read it, and then for people that want to watch, I mean, isn't that pretty powerful to see that live and on a website? That, I mean, that really helps, I think. Andrew, do you have a good way of doing this? I mean, I've used the company, I'll add them to the resources, called digitaldose.com. You know, I have no clue about these little flash players or whatever, but this is flash video, I believe, so it makes it faster loading.
I can add a resource as well, but basically there's a new system that's recently come out. One of the challenges with web video is that every computer is basically being optimized to accept different formats, like, you know, it could be Windows Media Video, WMV, QuickTime, Flash, Real Media. You know, there's a half a dozen formats that are commonly used, but if you haven't got the right player, then the player won't, you know, you won't see the video. They have to install the player. So this new technology, which I can put on the resources, what it does is, in an instant, it sends a little message to the server that's hosting the video. Will send a message to your computer, which then sends back and says, I've got these players, and then it sends the video in those formats, which is absolutely brilliant. And that's the wave of the future.
Cool. Here's if you go back in your manual, page 627, here's an example of someone sending out a review copy to people that she doesn't know. This is one of my apprentices, Cindy Kapler. So, you know, she sent out a review copy asking for testimonials. Unsolicited follow-up, this is 628. So if somebody sends me out, you know, an email that says, hey, you know, awesome about blah, 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 or this things are really going great in my business, thanks to you, I'll send back a quick note that says, hey, that's a great story, and you know, would you mind elaborating? Can I get some more details, and can I use your comments? Now, you know, once again, I'm not an attorney, so I think that once somebody says back, if you got written permission that says you can use my story, I feel pretty comfortable with that. For testimonials, you'll see that my super duper follow up in just a little bit, but 630, page 630, day 21, this is an autoresponder that goes out to people who bought public domain riches. Notice it's a questionnaire, and we're not only trying to get back testimonials, but we're also, you know, trying to get some more information back from the customers. What are they interested in? What could be a future product? What else do they want more help on? What are the biggest obstacles? You know, what can we do to improve the information? And then at the bottom of this says, may I use your comments in our marketing? Yes or no, I'll only use your name and city. You know, so it's okay. Now, obviously, the better testimonials, you know, like what Leo did, and he's given bribing people to the more info they'll disclose, the better. You know, some people will even be like, hey, call me on this number if you don't think this guy is for real. Actually, you wrote that, Fernando, I think, on your testimonial, where it's like, you know, just call me on this number if you think that, you know, if you really want to know this guy's legitimate. So this is my super duper deal that I just did, you know, full disclosure. This is one of the reasons I did this seminar. As I told you guys in the material, was I wanted to get like some incredible success stories. And so there's two ways of coming here, is $5,000 or a success story where you've made over $50,000 with my material. So it's a pretty, when we got some incredible testimonials back. Let's see, before we get into that, page 635, here's a testimonial contest example. This is one that I did for the doctors, where we faxed it out and said, everyone who gives me back a testimonial, they'll get this little special report that I did with this guy who's an expert on baby boomer psychology. And then PS, extra bonus, whoever faxes in the best story also get a free copy of a patient attraction kit of their choice. So it's a pretty cool bonus for them. And then here, 636, you can see that I'm getting signature and printed name and so on to get their permission. 637, this is what I was talking about for this seminar, where we have a whole form. We got a checkbox that had to be clicked that says you have the rights to use my story in whole and part, for whatever you want. And then we have all these questions that are essentially leading questions. you know, before you got my materials, what did your business look like? Then what did your business look like after? What did your personal life look like before? What did your personal life look like after? How much do you think these have been worth to you? So specific results. Let's see, other stuff. I mean, this is fairly good size info that we're getting back from people. You know, what's the biggest personal benefit? What's your biggest discovery? Number 9's a big one. What would you tell anyone who's skeptical about buying this stuff? And then a link to your picture, that's optional.
The very last thing, after they said yes to, you know, yes, use this, yes, use that, finally I'll say, hey, listen, you know, would you mind if I put your email? I said, no one's going to email you because I've got other people and, you know, they've never been emailed. But is it okay that I have your email and let people know that they can email you to ask questions about me? And sure enough, they'll say yes. And I have a whole section on testimonials that give that permission.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. I mean, the testimonials, you want to use them everywhere. I mean, anywhere you possibly can. Like Mike, you were talking about answering objections. I think that's a huge place you want to use it. I never thought about using it for security of your site. I use them a lot on my order forms. Right at the order form, we'll have a different testimonial from somebody. You know, just if you think you got enough testimonials, you probably don't. Your customers want even more. And you can see just some really cool ones. 641, I just copied a handful of the ones that we got, bless you, from just this thing. And, you know, I'm going to turn those into really cool case studies and so on. And hopefully some of you will be so kind as to give me some video testimonials, too, about your stories. But you can see, like, you know, here's Fernando's, which is on 645. I mean, look at all the information that I got to work with that then I can compress into something that works really well.
How did you capture this? What was the software or online?
Charlie's asking, what is the software? How did I capture it online? It was actually, I used a guy named Paul Galloway, who's my tech guy. He has a software called TAF Pro, Telefriend Pro, which he kind of reformats as like just a form capture. It's really more used for as a refer a friend type deal, but he can do whatever he wants with it, and then we just, in our email, we'll get this thing coming in. 647 is here's an example of an email. So once again, using it everywhere we can. This is, I have 6 follow-up emails that I use a lot, and this is one of the follow-up sequences. And so this is, the subject line is, I couldn't have said it better, and it's just basically all testimonials about the copywriting course. And it's a real simple way to write a follow-up email.
You know, if you don't have a lot of testimonials, sometimes you're trying to figure out how to beef it up. And I saw on one site where they had them in the border, they had it on the margin, and they had the same testimonial later on. And I caught myself when I was reading the sales page going, oh, I know this guy. The guy, who knows who this person was, but because they had been the top testimonial on the margin, I recognized the name when I saw it further down in the copy, and it kind of gave him name recognition, even though who knows who this person was. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's pretty interesting. Another thing that you want to, just a caveat with testimonials that I just remembered, is you want to think about who you're going to have on your site, especially, I mean, this is more important like in the marketing world. If there's certain people who are known as testimonial. Yes. You don't want that person on your site because he's going to be on 50 other sites. You know, why do you want that? It kind of reduces your credibility. The other thing that you want to think about is not only having a mix, if you can. I mean, as your product increases, you'll get more and more testimonials. But the more you got real end user testimonials, those are usually better than just only expert type testimonials. But I like having a mix in most cases.